Welcome back to the Social Distance Podcast. We've got a special guest today by the name of George Bennett. You would have seen him on the show before. It's good to have him back. He had a little bit of a breather, but he's coming hot, and it's been a good conversation, actually, so you'll enjoy it. We try to touch on the Vuelta. We do touch on the Vuelta, but that goes off into a real big tangent about what's the difference between the highest achieving athletes in the world, and does the X factor exist, and what is the X factor? We don't always agree. Enjoy, like, share, subscribe.
Let's just run the intro and wing it like we always do and see what comes out of it.
Let's get ready to rumble! Front kick.
Just getting pulled in the basketball chat.
My radar's going pretty hard at the moment, I think we should.
Will you shut up, man?
That escalated quickly.
We're going to need to get some more qualified guests on the show, eh?
How's it feel to be back, GB? You missed us? Big time.
A little bit. Actually, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
But obviously not enough to, didn't miss you enough to volunteer or respond to any messages to actually do a show, but, you know, somewhere.
We stopped asking you, actually.
Yeah.
Well,
did you do shows?
Do you know we did some shows?
No, how'd you go? Who'd you have?
We had Daryl Impey.
He'd be good.
Aaron Gate.
Oh, he'd be good.
Good replacements, actually.
It sounds like you're better off without me.
Yeah, we'll give you one more shot.
How's the ratings?
It's not the same. We're going to show George some love. We've got to give George some love, Bills. We've missed him. It's just not the same.
It's not the same.
Oh, no. Appreciate it.
It just doesn't bring that dynamic of like somebody who wants to say something real controversial.
He feels he has a lot to lose.
And in the end, he like, that dynamic of just sort of beating around the bush and not getting to the point, it's missed, you know, on the show.
He feels a bit like Avicii, you know, like he's a super talent, but you can't push him too far. I mean, actually, it's a bad example because Avicii was a bad ending. And there's an element of actually going.
We don't know how I end.
But do you know what I mean? Like, don't push the bear. Like, if the bear wants a break, let him go hibernate, and then when he comes out, he's ready to maul people again. Like, he's fine.
I think it was a well-deserved break, to be fair. And I think that, you know, the podcast world, it's we do pretty well to make it pretty low demands in the podcast world. I think people who have far more successful shows and actually have a bit of growth in their show put a bit more effort in. But you reckon?
How's the What's Occurring boys? I noticed that that like they will finish a stage, and then they'll be on pods like on the bus or at the hotel. Imagine a grandy. Imagine that you get in the bus. You've just done a 200K welter stage. And you're like, oh, let's jump on a pod.
Mm. Yeah, but I reckon they're bringing in some cash, those boys, as well from the pod.
I reckon that's the only thing that would make me do that. Someone, you're going to get 10 grand to do that episode. You'd be like, oh, probably miss massage and chuck out a pod.
Yeah, that's right.
It is a good show though, because it is effective if you can do that as a cycling show. There's no doubt about it; it'll be effective. But the reality is, we've all got other jobs, and we enjoy doing this though as a hobby.
Yeah.
Oh, now I've got to give a shout out. I should have done this 3 months ago. I was at the casino with my mate Illy, and he doesn't even know about this podcast. Like, never listened to it. Didn't even know I did it. And we're walking past, and this bloke yells out, "Jonesy!" And I'm thinking, who's that? Like, did I used to play footy with this guy? He goes, "Where's Bills? Where's GB?" And I thought, oh, okay. Yeah, he's a listener. So his name, Will and Lisa, they were celebrating their 10th wedding anniversary, massive listeners. And he said to his missus, he goes, "Told you I should have worn the, like, great bloke shit rider t-shirt." Like, as if... Oh, yeah, of course we'll see Jonesy at the case. Yeah, like, it would have been perfect.
Or the guy in the casino probably see Jonesy.
Yeah, that's it. And they were from Tamworth. And then the funniest was, so we were chatting away and, you know, about 5-10 minutes. Anyway, we walk off and my mate Illy goes, "What the fuck was that all about?" So what are you talking about? The Social Distance Podcast. He goes, what are you talking about? Okay, did you not know I do this pod? He goes, "Nah. How long have you been doing that for?" I said, "I don't know, 3 years." He goes, "Who's on it?" And that's why I had to spend half an hour having a beer with Illy. So, well, there's this potty. So you're talking about like not putting effort into shows. My good mates I grew up with don't even know about this show. It's a disgrace.
It's a disgrace.
Oh, no, it is a disgrace.
Happy wedding anniversary to Will and Lisa from Tamworth.
Will and Lisa, yeah.
Wonder how they got on.
Hopefully they're still together after the cast.
Yeah. Oh, he looked like he was up a bit. He was definitely up and about.
Yeah, good.
So I'm guessing you guys have covered a lot of what's going on in the cycling world. And for ease's sake, should we start off at the Vuelta?
Absolutely.
And one thing I want to start with, the best thing that's happened so far in the context of, okay, this was Sepp Kuss necking a bottle of Lindau on the podium. And the best thing for me was, do you remember the story during the Tour de France when the head of Jumbo, Richard Plugger, was like, oh yeah, you know, the reason we win the Tour de France is because, like, you know, we shared a hotel with France et Azur and we saw two of them having a beer on the rest day. And, you know, that's why we go, that's why we won the Tour de France and they don't. Yeah. That was the kind of vibe, you know?
I was like,
bro, I know what's going on in France et Azur. They're a very well-functioning team. I'm very well abreast of France et Azur and I'm very well abreast of Lotto Jumbo. And the difference is you can afford Roglic, Wout van Aert, Jumbo Visma. It's not because they had one beer that suddenly made them way better.
But like that Front Side Azure, I was talking about this with someone the other day as well when I saw that footage of Sepp. And I was like, the Front Side Azure media social media team, they missed an opportunity there.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Create a meme or something. Like, and like all in jest and all in fun. Like obviously, like
to be fair to Matteo though, on the Champs they did have like a sign, like it was like un petit pair there for Plugger or something like this.
Really?
But I just had to laugh, you know. That's why I just like Sepp Kuss, the greatest cyclist of our generation. Just the fact that he got up next basically a liter of champers.
And then, he knew that it was his only drink between Barcelona and Madrid. he saw that social media article as well and thought, fuck, I won't be able to celebrate this tonight. So I'm just gonna make the most out of this 5-liter Magnum bottle of champagne. I'm going to take as much in as I can. What a legend. Is he going to win the Vuelta?
I hope so.
Fuck, me too.
Yeah.
He was so good.
Yeah. So, George, you know, like, the internal side of things. Would the teammates be generally happy for Sepp Kuss, or was there an element of those guys that are primed to, like, take big scalps in their career? Like, I don't just want to win one grandy. I want to win 10 throughout my career. Is there an element of
those, two blokes will be happy? I think like that. Nah, they'll be stoked. I mean, you think about how much he's given them. I think also like one, if you're Primoz, Sepp's already helped you win 3 Vueltas. 2, if you're Jonas, Sepp just helped you win the Tour. And once you've won the Tour, nothing else matters. The Vueltas, I feel like the Vueltas just a bit of fun for Jonas in a way. You know what I mean? I think he wouldn't be too stressed about it. I reckon those guys, if the opportunity, the thing is, the problem with this pod is about to come out about an hour after the time trial finishes, and that's going to change everything. But I feel like if Sepp's got a lead at the end of today, I would like to think that the boys rally around him.
But I think, like, ultimately, Sepp, the reason Sepp's there, the reason Roglic is there, or the reason Sepp there is clear, because he's the best mountain domestique in the world, and he's been invaluable to the success of both those guys over the last couple of years. That's why he's there. But he's also so good that he puts himself in the position that he's in now, and it brings a whole new dynamic to that team. And the reason Jonas and Roglic are there is because Jumbo Visma have said, well, I don't know if that's officially said, but it seems pretty clear that they want to win all 3 Grand Tours in 1 year, you know? And for Jumbo Visma, and again, I'm just making up inaccurate guesses here, but I don't think they really care who they win it with.
No.
They don't care if they win it with Roglic. They don't care if they win it with Vingegaard. They don't care if they win it with Sepp Kuss. They just want to win it. And then now they're in a position where Sepp Kuss has had that stage where it was, I didn't see the stage, but all accounts pretty chaos, flipped the script completely, put Sepp Kuss 3 minutes in front of all of his own two teammates, but every other GC rider as well. And now all of a sudden, Quickstep especially, who have Remco there obviously, are thinking, fuck, we were worried about Roglic and Vingegaard, but now Sepp's 3 minutes in front of us. Okay, the time trial's going to come up and that gap's going to close from Remco to think, but to Sepp, but he's probably still going to have a lead. But even if he doesn't have a lead,
even if he doesn't, imagine if he's, exactly, that's it.
20 seconds behind, he's still in the game.
What you need to be is after the TT with no more time trial, you need to be like 2 minutes in front of Sepp. Mm. And do you know what, it just highlights for me like how important it is to have a super team when you're riding GC, because it's not necessarily about the guys you've got up the road, like when Seth was up the road. It's also about the guys you've got playing anchor on the wheel, you know? So, like, Remco ran out of teammates pretty quickly on Jalambre and had to ride a lot of that climb on the front, you know. Oh, actually got dropped from when they hit him. But, like, for an element there, he was pulling the two best guys, Primoz and Jonas, in his wheel because he had no option. And then you're like, well, I don't really want to pull these guys because they've got, you know, you just caught between a rock and a hard place. And when you just show up with a super team and then you're like, it's actually been real smart from Jumbo to keep Sepp in it. Like in the Tour and in the other races, they often just say, like, you know, I remember the Giro, he had a problem with his bike early on and they just drove straight past him. And, you know, it was never on the cards for him to stay close. It was never even a conversation. But I feel like now they've got like such a stranglehold on it because you can just like fuck everyone over each way. You know, in every situation, if you've got a guy there, you've got them by the balls.
Yeah. And the difference between the Vuelta and the Tour de France is that they need Sepp to play that domestique role because they're going up against teams, well, you know, namely UAE. They're going up against UAE, who Pogacar, he's also going to have numbers there when it's a group of 10 or 5 riders, you know, like he's going to have Adam Yates, he's going to have Grosjean there. So Vingegaard needs to have Sepp there as a domestique because he needs somebody there to help control the situation when it's down to 5 or 10 guys. But the at the Vuelta, they actually don't need Sepp to play that role because in general, the GC teams that are going up against Jumbo aren't as strong and they don't have that ability. Remco doesn't have the ability to have somebody there in a group of 5. He's probably going to be isolated at that point. Whereas Jumbo still have guys like Kelderman who can be there pretty deep into the final. So Kelderman can actually play that role of Sepp Kuss, and Sepp Kuss can actually play a more of a, I'm part of a 3-prong attack here. And until I get dropped, categorically dropped on a climb or multiple climbs and lose a minute or two, I'm actually a threat to you as well. And I'm part of an attacking mindset where I can go up the road and Remco's like, well, fuck, I can't really let Sepp go. Roglic goes, fuck, I can't really let Roglic go. Vingegaard goes, I can't really let Roglic go because he hasn't got the teammates there like UAE would have in the Tour de France. And that's why they can use Sepp in this way now as opposed to having to use Sepp as a domestique. So it shows the strength of Jumbo. It shows how fucking good that team is. There's no doubt about it. And it's going to make it... the time trial is so important for Remco now. Like he needs to claw back as much time and try to take Tom and Sepp, which he could well do. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting race. And I don't think, going back to my first question, will Sepp win the Vuelta? I don't think he will. I'd love him to, but I don't think he will. I think the winner will still come from Roglic, Vingegaard or Remco. But Sepp's going to be, he's going to be right up there until the end of the third week. It's no doubt about that.
If Sepp wins the Tour, Bules, now that you're on the other side of the fence, first of all, how does that affect his contract? And GB, from a rider's perspective, once you've won a Grand Tour, can you then transition and go back and go, oh, well, I'm still like a super domestique? Or do you go, nah, bugger it. I won it. Legit.
I reckon most people wouldn't go backwards. Most people would be like, I'm fucking riding for me, boys.
That's it.
You can't in that team. You can't in that team. And also, I think Sepp just doesn't care enough about it. Like, he's just like, you know what I mean? He doesn't love it. He doesn't live and breathe the guy to get results.
Surely you'd care enough if your manager's in your ear going, mate, come on, let's go for the juice and cash. And let's go.
I don't think it would change its value, like, from a financial point of view. I think that Sepp already has his value. And that team, like, every single team in cycling and everybody who watches cycling knows how important that guy is to their success, whether it's with Jonas or whether it's with Primoz. They know that they need Sepp there to be successful. And so he has his value from that. And whether or not he wins the Vuelta or not, I don't think it would ultimately wouldn't change his value that, maybe not that much, like potentially with a bonus or something. But
couldn't you then sign for juicy cash for one of the other teams wanting to go, well, we'll get like a GC leader, but or they smart enough to go, well, he wouldn't have won it on any other team.
Yeah, but I think, like George says, like Sepp's the kind of guy who's like, okay, maybe over the last couple of years he's changing his mindset a bit, and like he sees how good he is, and he sees that he can probably win the Grand Tour or win his own races on his own merit. So there's that juicy cash for other teams that he could go to and be a leader, or he could just take the juicy cash from Jumbo and continue to do what he's doing.
I like how
and then go to the welter in a situation like this and maybe win a Grand Tour from a situation like this rather than taking the
I think he's got more chance of winning a Grand Tour on Jumbo than, like, for example, if he was on another team right now.
FDJ smashing piss every night.
Well, if he went to another team, if he went to another team to lead a Grand Tour, he would be one of those guys who's up against Jumbo rather than being in the organization.
That's a problem. If you're not on them, if you're not on Jumbo, you got to race against Jumbo, and that's fucking hard.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, if you look at the GC leaders in that team, it's obviously Jonas and Primoz, and Sepp has never been considered one until he rode himself into the red jersey by 3 minutes at the Vuelta. But there's two standout leaders in that team. There's three Grand Tours every year, and the Tour de France is the most important one for every single team. They obviously have the goal this year of wanting to win all three in 1 year, which they look on track to do. But, like, maybe Primoz goes to the Giro next year, and maybe Jonas goes to Tour, or maybe I don't know what they're going to do. But then,
or maybe one of them leaves the team,
or maybe one leaves the team, and then
it's outrageous outrageous numbers. Rumors. How's the rumor cycle been this year?
It's been insane.
You know,
well, I felt like Remco coming into the Vuelta, like, he's pissed off. He's in a right roll mood. Like, yeah, I've validated, like, the first TT. You know, it was dark and piss and rain, but you complain to the Spanish, man. They're never going to go. We better fix this. They're going to go, mate. Shut up.
You see how they arrived. You see how the plane landed. The plane got redirected to the rest day travel. And then they all had to take a bus. They arrive at the hotel at 3 a.m. They're all complaining. And I saw one guy on Twitter talking about, like, mate, 10 years ago with the Schleck boys and the rest of them, they got in at 3 a.m. every night. They were fine.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
The Vuelta's come a long way, eh? Like,
those days of going to the Vuelta parties are...
But I heard that, like, Remco had to give his team, like, a real rev up about, yeah, this is all bullshit and all that. And it's like, dude, your dad was saying it all. He's your manager. Of course you're bloody fielding offers and that. Just cough it on the chin.
Like, did you watch the Lenton Rouge interview with Remco?
I only saw bits and pieces. I didn't watch the whole thing. Because that's what's kicked it off, isn't it?
It's a good watch. It's worth watching it. And, like, I won't say it changed my perception of Remco, because I actually don't think I really had a perception of Remco. Like, I think I've always been more of a Remco fan than the other side of it. Mm. But I wasn't a fanatic, obviously. I was just like, oh, he's fucking good. That guy's young and he's, like, you know. But then I watched the thing and it did switch me across to, like, pretty heavily in the Remco fan group.
I feel like he gets crucified in the media because he'll just say something that's on his mind. When actually he's a really good bloke.
He's a
say something
guy,
that's on his mind, and everyone goes, "Oh, that's arrogant." What?
But do you know what it is?
Fucked off because, like, he crashed after the finish and said this was bullshit. And then what do you mean to say? Like, oh, that, thanks for not putting a run off.
I couldn't see anything. What I mean? Like,
woo.
Well, they say to him, like,
65K.
And they say to him, like, he references it in this Lenton Rouge interview where he says, like, after the Worlds, I think it was the Worlds in Belgium, they said, oh, I think that was when it happened, eh, that, like, the Wout van Aert and Remco, like, going against each other, media fucking fanfare shit about it. And it all came about because they said, do you think you had the legs to win today? And he said, yes. And then all of a sudden he's arrogant, but, like, he's multiple world champion, so he, like, why can't he say that? And, like, one thing I really noticed about Remco in this interview, which was, like, pretty cool, was, like, he is actually a massive student of the sport. You know, like, he already knows he's good. He already knows he can win races, but, like, he's not content with that. He knows he can be better. He knows that things can improve. He knows he can improve himself. He knows that the people around him can improve. He knows that everything can continue to improve. And he just wants to keep doing that. And he wants to keep learning. And he's actually, like, a guy who's just like, I'm still trying to, I'm fucking blessed with this ability to be able to win bike races since I was 16 years old. But I still haven't got the best out of myself, and I want, and I still don't know everything about the sport, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around everything. And like every single day is a new day for me, and it's something that, and every single day I learn something new. And he is actually a guy who's just like, I'm just fucking trying to learn, and like, and people have all these different opinions of me, but like, he's like, I'm just trying to continue to grow and develop as a bike rider, and I'm fucking confident in myself. Why shouldn't I be?
Yeah.
Look how good I am. You know, yeah. That's not arrogant to me.
He backs it up.
That's just someone who's like, fucking driven.
Mm.
That's a different.
Imagine point. You
him,
with
Roglic, Vingegaard, and the rest of us. You know,
yeah.
Pogacar.
Well, no, the difference is genetics. That's the difference between the rest of us. Because you can't tell me that those guys are more motivated or dedicated than, say, me. They're just genetically gifted.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a big part in it. But they still have like, it's like every single, like the world's greatest sportsman, Michael Jordan. Okay, genetically or like. Gifted,
going there, are we?
You know, Tiger Woods, gifted. Like they're all gifted. But
Tiger Woods was, mate, he put the.
But they all have something fucking different in their minds.
Yes.
You know, they all have something different. And it's not necessarily the drive or the motivation to train and prepare and all that stuff, because every professional athlete has that, or they should have that. Yeah. To lesser degrees with some people in that.
I don't agree. I think this is some weird mystique given to greatness that's actually it's a crock of shit. It's an absolute crock of shit that you give this mystique to a guy. Oh, they're wired differently. No, it's not. Come live a week with me. We're all wired differently. Everyone, you're wired differently. It's just that you didn't have the genetics. I don't have the genetics. It's not.
Yeah, okay, but yeah, what about?
Hang
what
on,
about,
hang on.
But the same on. Thing. The same switch in their head, or the same like thing that they have in their head exists in the business world as well, you know?
Yeah, but you're telling me I don't have that switch. I have that switch. You have that switch.
No, you do have the switch. Because another guy compared to your journey, Bennett, would say, Bennett, what's he got that I don't have and I'm not even a professional?
There's a pub rider in Nelson I grew up with who goes, who's trying to say the same shit as him. Oh, he just had he had something different. No, I just had very fortunate genetics that I was good enough to be quite good and I was dedicated. I don't think you can say that any of the greats have something intangible that we don't have as good professionals.
I think they do.
Genetics.
Again, like
it's
Michael
genetics.
Jordan, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods. Like, okay, imagine you're like when Michael Jordan in the finals game when he just got fucking beaten up in the first three quarters, couldn't score a point. The whole fucking teams were boom, 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 boom. Only Michael Jordan was able to come out and slot 30 points in the fourth quarter. Tiger Woods, who's leading the Masters.
Genetics.
Leading the Masters, going bogey, 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 bogey on the front nine. Drops nine shots on the front nine. Only Tiger Woods could claw 11 shots back on that back nine.
Now we're talking about mental sports. Okay, but these sports are different to endurance sports because it doesn't matter how fucked off I am. Okay, someone's crashed you. You're like, right, revenge. I'm going out there today. I'm going to rip everyone's legs off. I'm in the breakaway, yes or yes. Or I'm dropping this bloke, yes or yes. It doesn't matter how angry or how much desire or how much I want it. If I can't, if I reach 14 millimoles of lactate, that's nothing to do with how much I can push myself or how I can. That's just fucking shitty genetics running out of steam.
But okay, then maybe you're a bad example or you're a bad person to compare to these two guys. Maybe it's to Remco. Maybe it's better to compare Remco or Pogacar or Vingegaard to just those three. So like genetically and physically, they are all fucking freaks. Okay. Let's use Pogacar and Vingegaard as an example. Genetically and physically, those guys are freaks. Those two are very, very hard to separate on a physical level. Mm. Okay. So what makes the difference between Vingegaard winning the Tour de France and Pogacar not winning the Tour de France? And Pogacar has that as well. So does Vingegaard. But there's something in those people that makes the difference when it matters.
Yeah, but that's that. For example, I'm going to argue my point here again. There's no way that was in Vingegaard because I raced with Vingegaard when he was a good rider, but he was, you know, would get nervous and fall apart here and there. And so he's learned, it's a skill he's learned. But what makes the difference between those two? Well, it could be teammates on the bike. Look at how good Jumbo were. Look at, you know, preparation, look at equipment, look at all this, there's all these so many external factors that are not directly related to some intangible thing, this mystique that you're giving these guys, when I think there's a guy who's racing Continentals who tries as hard, he's got as much mongrel, he's got all this stuff, and he's just got fucking dud genes. You know, he just got this shit. Because I can name a lot of guys that work so hard, and I can name the opposite. I can name guys that don't have it mentally and have got fucking godlike genetics. So I think to give this mystique, because they're so good, that there's some, I agree with Jordan. He was, it's clear there was some just overwhelming will to win at the fact that he was able to, he was prepared to burn people in the pursuit of victory, burn his mates, burn his teammates, throw people under the bus in the pursuit of victory. But that is so different to what Jonas isn't going out there and having to be an asshole or having to win at all costs and this and that. He's going out there. He's dedicated. He's really professional, but he's surrounded by good people. And he's just, you know, I knew he was good and I knew Seth was good from early days when they signed on the team. They did some VO2 lab testing and my trainer went, oh, shit, these guys have got it. And Jonesy was asking before, is it the VO2, is that a measure? And it is. It's a big measure. They say it's one of the big measures of talent, but going by that, I should be a god of cycling because I have a crazy VO2. So there's actually
another...
So your genetics
are good, so you're missing the spark.
No, but there's another measure that's far more important. The measure is far more important is your lactate...
tolerance.
Like your ability to use lactate as a fuel, you know, so you get more fuel out of it.
How do you improve that?
Have the right parents.
My lactate's fucked, so I know I'm only going to get to this point in my career progression.
It's trainable to a point, but essentially that's the problem with endurance sports. It's not like skill-based where like Tiger Woods just put in the hours and had a psychopath. Okay.
That's what I mean. I think golf sports that are mechanical, like golf, you know, not endurance, he was putting on greens for 12 hours a day from when he was a little kid, and that was all because of his dad. His dad had
and
that
you could have done that too. If your dad was a psychopath that wanted to live his life vicariously through you, you could have been Tiger Woods.
He had that thing in his brain that allowed him to be so good. That's what
autism.
Made him.
Yeah, it got trained into him though. But like his dad trained him those techniques he learned in the army to.
Yeah, I mean,
he
got
it. He had it. No,
Maybe it's not autism. Maybe it's obsessive compulsive disorder or something where I think it's more OCD. You're allowed to obsess.
Are we trying to clinically diagnose Tiger Woods now? Or
sex addict.
Sex addict. That's all we know.
But drug addict.
He's addicted to golf and he's addicted to women. We know that.
What
but
about
he won.
Okay?
That's what.
What about okay? Going back to cycling and me, I don't know the answer. And I can't have a smart conversation about it because I don't know what that thing is in the brain. But I think
I'm enjoying your insights.
I think it exists. So somebody in cycling, okay, somebody in cycling who fucking had it, and you can't argue it. Lance Armstrong, he had that.
But you're just saying that because he was prepared to burn his mates. This intangible quality is win all. This intangible quality, if I'm looking at your examples, Jordan, Lance, whatever, it's the willingness to burn everybody in their life
in
the pursuit of winning. At all costs. To win at all costs.
All costs. Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think Primoz has win at all costs because that guy enjoys a beer. That guy's a family man. He's a nice guy. He doesn't dog his teammates. He is not win at all costs, but he fucking wins a lot. Holy
it's
shit.
Not win
Tadej
at all costs.
Great
I don't
example.
Think it's win at all costs.
Nice
I think it's
bloke ever.
I think it's the ability to come back, which is important in cycling, no matter how good you are. The ability to deal with something that doesn't go your way. And remove that from your brain, remove that from ever happening, wake up the next day and succeed.
But what about this? Okay, I'll pose this question to you then. What about something didn't go your way? You didn't get selected for a race. But the next day you wake up and you try just as hard, but you don't win. Or you crash one day, you lose the GC. But the next day you get up and you try just as hard. You go, right, I'm going to put it out of my mind and I'm going to give everything. And you give everything, but your genetics stop you from winning. So you have the same as the guy that had the genetics to win. It's more the other guys that this is when it cracks me, right? When people go, oh, this guy's so mentally tough, you know, he got second at the Tour, but he gets up and fights again to the Vuelta. What? That's not mentally tough. The guy that got his head kicked in every single day at the Tour and finished Gruppetto out the ass and he tried his hardest. and he still wants to be a pro cyclist, that's mentally tough.
Mm. Yeah, but it's there's no doubt you can't just have this thing in your brain that it will make you a winner. You also have to be in an endurance sport. You have to have the genetics and the physical capabilities, of course. But like someone, okay, Pogacar again is another example. Cracked, lost the Tour de France, lost minutes and minutes, you know? Okay, on Col de l'Oise, we saw that. But he has in his brain to go, but fucking tomorrow, I'm going to put the whole fucking team on the front and I'm going to fucking smash the shit out of this race and I'm going to win the stage.
Yeah, but that's just mongrel.
Maybe it's mongrel then. Because like a lot of people in...
For example, I could have lost 8 minutes
in that situation, like a lot of people in that situation, and it's happened in Tour de France's in the past, where somebody has cracked, sitting within a minute of the GC, cracked, lost 3 or 4 minutes, slipped back. Then the next day, they lose 3 or 4 minutes again. And then they lose
Because
they haven't got the thing.
No, they don't have the... Either they don't have the genetics or the people around the time to eat enough and they just put themselves in a hole.
There's a new show coming. Are you a mongrel or a softcock?
Yeah.
Make the choice.
I think a half mongrel's a... Yeah, yeah. Half mongrel or...
Maybe we should rename the show to Mongrels and Softcocks and we'll get guests on every week and we'll just ask them, are you a mongrel or softcock?
Instead of legend or belly, got a new segment.
The full mongrel?
Mongrel or softcock. Love it.
Well, anyway, comment below if you think that these top world-class athletes have this.
If this is a debate, the worm would have had well in front for me. And then slowly the worms come back, and now I'm sort of siding with George. Mm. For cycling, doesn't apply to with a Dornenfrei goal.
Yeah, yeah, don't get me wrong. Biomechanics sports, completely different.
I think it applies in biomechanical skill-based sports. I think it applies in physical endurance sports. I think it applies in the business world. I think it applies with judges and lawyers. I think it applies with doctors. I think it applies with fucking in every single facet of the world. I think it applies in every single facet of the world. And
but think about this, right? And
the combination to be successful in all those different worlds are slightly different. So you need to have a good wrist hinge in golf or whatever, and you need to have the thing in your brain. You need to be able to fucking shoot a three-pointer and you need to have that thing in your brain. You need to have genetics and a high VO2 max and that thing in your brain. You need to be able to say... walk into an office to the nicest person you've ever fucking met and say, you're not doing your job, you're fired. You need to have, like... You need to have the combination is different, but high succeeding people all have it.
What about if we got shirts where they were reversible? You could have mongrel on one and then you flip it inside out and it says soft cock, depend on any scenario. Hey,
depending on your mood. All right. Yeah, I don't mind that. I think just to wrap this up then, the two things on this. What the quality you're describing literally just sounds like, do you have an asshole in you? And everyone's got an asshole in them.
A little bit of it.
Secondly, to make this point that I think that if you're Tiger Woods, you have a shocking opening round and you're angry, like, I'm going to get up and show these guys, oh, I'm angry. That doesn't help you fucking shoot a bloody 60 round in golf, does it?
Yeah, but I never said angry. I said it's something. That's what I'm just going to call it something. I don't know exactly what it is.
Don't you?
But he's
the kind of person that believes in ghosts.
No, it's not tangible. It's no measurement on it. It's not something that we can measure or whatever. It's just that's why it's been called the fucking the special thing.
X factor. They call it the X factor because it's no real name.
Because nobody knows what it is. But Tiger Woods is one of the few golfers, maybe the only golfer who, like you say, could have that shit round and then go back the next day and shoot 66. Every other golfer would have shot fucking 88 for the rest of the tournament.
I would say that anyone that can't recover from that isn't worth their salt.
Random story. I remember going to the President's Cup in 2010 and all the big names were there, I think. It might have been 09. Tiger Woods was there and Adam Scott was on the practice screen. We're there at the start and, you know, everyone's real quiet even at the practice screen. This bloke got a phone call from his missus. He goes, hey, love, I'm just at the practice screen watching Adam Scott working on his three putts. And I just remember, as he said it, Scott putted and gave him the biggest fucking death stare and it like lipped out. It was like perfect timing.
But maybe that's part of it as well, is your ability to manipulate or to play mental games with your competitors. And I would say that Pogacar is very, very good at that. And I'm not a psychologist by any stretch of the imagination, but the way he portrays himself in the media is not, that's who he is. Okay. He's a lovable character.
Oh, you mean like fun loving? I'm just here having fun. You guys are trying too hard.
He's not stupid. You know, and he knows how to to like he jumped
like
in
the Chavez.
He jumps in a swimming pool and the rest day, you know, he's jumped in a swimming pool and the world kicks off like, oh, he's trying to win Tour de France. He jumped in a swimming pool. Well, for starters, he jumped in a fucking swimming pool. Give him a rest. Give him a break. It's 40 degrees outside. What's wrong with jumping in a swimming pool? Yeah. Like, that's his personality. He likes to have fun. But at the same time, when that media storm blew up, I bet you he's just going, ha.
Yeah.
Fuckers. You know, like he's not stupid and he's authentic, but being authentic is a way of playing a little game, I think, mentally with his competitors.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Pogacar, we'll get him on the show next week and he'll tell us if that's true or not.
Yeah, full mongrel or half
mongrel. We've got him on the line now. Poggy, what do you think of the chat?
Mongrel.
What would he say? Mongrel. Yeah, no, nah, mongrel. Definitely, yeah, I'm mongrel. A mongrel. He'd play the game. Mongrel.
Like, yeah, yeah, Chavez, sorry, Jonesy.
Yeah, he's a classic.
Again, smiling assassin, you know? Yeah. And in the end, it starts to fucking annoy people, you know? It's like, oh, fuck up.
Telling you to smile more. And
got under people's skin because of it.
You know, yeah, telling you how good it is. It's just cycling, relax. As he's got, you know, he's holding onto your handlebars. He's pretty much riding your bike, you know, like in the finals.
Nah, relax. One of the greatest things I ever saw was at a Vuelta and Buells was there. And that was that day that Chavez went from fourth to third on the podium and had to pull back a minute 20 on Contador. And there was that team meeting where it was like, fuck, what do we do? Remember Bill's like, do we risk it and play it safe? Because if you blow, you're going to blow, you're going to lose fourth. You might lose out of the top 10. And remember Chavez got up and goes, guys, fuck it. We didn't come here to like play it safe. We're going all in, boys. Mm. Who's with me? And then I remember you stood up, you fucking put your fist in the air. You go, fuck yeah, we're fucking all in. It was like any given Sunday.
Mighty Ducks moment.
It was a Mighty Duck moment, but the way that stage panned out, where you guys had done recon, you knew the stage back to front, and then you had Housen up the road. Oh, mate, that's as good as it gets.
But maybe going back to it a little bit, like Tiger Woods is again as an example, maybe Michael Jordan as well. Like all these guys who have that X factor, let's call it, maybe that because they have it, it's actually like they all have their vices as well.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
they all have like quite heavy vices where like Tiger Woods was obviously a woman. Michael Jordan was obviously gambling.
I think Tiger Woods was Viking.
Tiger Woods was a woman.
No. Tiger Woods had about, when he got done for drink driving, they found like 12 drugs in the system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just those human vices. You know, and Michael
what do you
Jordan.
Mean? Gamble, so I'm gonna put one to here.
Like a mad dog.
But like, okay, let's say you as a rider. You're telling me you didn't have. Were you a mongrel?
I had the vices, but I didn't have the X factor.
That's the problem. You should have
a soft cock with vices.
I had shit genetics, no X factor, and a whole lot of vices.
Way too many vices.
And I was a steadily average pro.
Yeah, but you're a good bloke.
Yeah,
that counts.
Yeah,
I think you just need a general mix. I think at the end of the day, you just need to look at life as like, are you having fun? You happy?
You sound like Chavez.
You get to travel the world. Such is the life.
Yeah,
don't worry about it.
Maybe you need a cocktail of it all. Let's make a cocktail shirt as well with like,
all right,
a big X in it. Can we claim the X? Yeah. Can we claim the X off Elon Musk or not?
I don't know. Hey, before we wrap things up, I just want to say another shout out to the voice of cycling, Phil Liggett. He turned 80, almost a month ago, so we're a bit late.
Wow. 80. I grew up with him, eh? That was my first. I honestly believe he's one of the factors that I got into road cycling. Because really? I just remember before school, when I was a mountain biker, I remember going before school and then the Tour de France would be on TV, the 6 to 8 a.m. replay from the stage highlights, and Phil Liggett commentating with Paul Sherwin.
I did the NBC thing with him this year. Obviously, I was in the studio, but he was the commentator. He's a commentator for NBC, him and Bob Roll. And same, like I grew up with Phil Liggett and, you know, on my TV watching the Tour de France, and it was really cool to work with him. And not that he was in France and I was in America, so I didn't see him face to face, but like we had each other and we could talk to each other like through our like fucking technology. And like it was the first time like I've really like intently listened to him commentate because I had to. I had to pick up things he was saying, and then because we would go on air and then they'd be like, what do you think about what Phil said, Sam? You know, so you had to be listening quite hard, not just like casually in the lounge room. And I got to say, the thing I noticed the most about Phil is his humor, man. He is fucking, oh, yeah. He's dry, he is so funny. He's got the driest sense of humor, and it's fucking awesome.
He can't pick a rider to save himself. He can't, like, you know, he's like, I think that that might be Cipollini. No, he retired 10 years ago. But, you know, it doesn't matter. You just don't care because he's a wordsmith.
Exactly. His job is job is to be a wordsmith and add color to keep people entertained and listen to it laughing.
Didn't you have one day, Bills, where they threw to you because their Phil's commentary went down?
Yeah. That was the scariest moment of my life. It was like, because we're not there to commentate. We're just there doing like special comments and then doing the pre and post race studio show. But then all of a sudden we're in their ear. They're like, Sam and Brent, you need to commentate. You need to commentate. We've lost comms. We've lost comms. I was like, fuck, I don't know how to commentate. And like, this gave me a real appreciation of how hard commentating is. And like, standing in the studio, you're nervous anyway, but at least you're talking about a subject you're supposed to be well-averse with. But commentating is a different story. And then we got thrown onto the bloody mics and we're like, we're having to commentate. And it was when that motorbike stopped Pogacar from attacking at the top where those time bonuses were, when who won the stage that day? Rodriguez won the stage. Yeah. And you know when Pogacar attacked to go for those bonus sprints and the motorbike on the way? That happened while we were commentating. And I was like, I was almost like, look at the fucking motorbike. What's happening here? Motorbike's in the way. I was just like, I don't know what to do.
Do you think going forward for us, there's a scope for like to run, you know how people run like alternative commentary? You press a different button and they can chip.
Absolutely.
And I reckon it'll be quite good just to pick a few stages. I mean, fucking shoot me. I'm not doing a sprint stage, you know.
You know what stage would be really good to do it for? Would be
the Champs. Like you can just analyze anybody.
The last like stage.
You know, here's old mate. Here's a shit tour. He's probably out of job next year.
Exactly.
Yeah. He's another soft cock.
You don't have to talk about what's happening in the stage. You can just talk about the Tour de France, and you can just talk like you could actually do that alternatively really well, I reckon.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, just on Phil, I remember 5 years ago, Jerry threw a party for Phil's 75th here in Melbourne because we're actually going to catch up with Phil. He's going to be in Australia and we're going to see him on Sunday night.
Because he does the tap, doesn't he? He comes down and
he's doing Amy Gillett's. They've got a function on.
Oh, yeah.
But just before we wrap things up, I remember Jerry said, we're doing a roast for Phil Liggett. And if you want to say a few words, and I thought, mate, roast. I'll lay the boots in, fucking oath. Like, give it to me. And I was the first speaker. So I got up and just laid into Phil about how he's a tight ass, and the jokes went flat. All I could hear is like cutlery on plates. And Phil gave me these looks of like, oh, I thought we were mates. Like, that's not even funny. And I was like going bright red, but I thought, I've committed. We've got to keep going. Mate. It just got progressively worse and worse. So then I thought, oh, well, fuck. I'm the icebreaker. Every other speaker after that will lay the boots in like a roast and it'll just... Once they get the booze in, they'll be fine. No, every other speaker was complimentary, saying how, you know, he's the icon, his voice is cycling, and all the nice things he's done. And I get to the end, I said to Jerry, I go, Jerry, you threw me under the fucking bus. Like, this is a roast. He goes, what'd you have for dinner, Dan? A roast. Oh, roast lamb. It wasn't a fucking roast. He said, you know, we're putting on a roast for Phil, like roast lamb. I thought it was like... Let's lay the boots in. I just said to Phil afterwards, I said, mate, I'm fucking so sorry. I thought it was a roast. Just said how he's tight as a fish's ass, and, you know, he never shouts a beer, and he never used to call home because, you know, couldn't call his missus because of fucking phone bills. Oh, mate, it's bad. So, anyway, if Jerry says we're doing a roast for Phil for his 80th, I'll say, mate, I'm not fucking talking.
Bring gravy. If he says that, bring gravy.
What'd you have for dinner, Dan? Roast lamb. Oh, shit. Sorry, Phil. Anyway. Bloody right, good to have you back, GB. GB.
Yeah. I got to go. I've got a meeting in 3 minutes.
All right. Sweet. Subscribe.
Good chat. A comment below. Let us know if you think that they have the X Factor or... Whose side are you on, George's or Jonesy's?
Give us your top five mongrels and your top five soft cocks.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And we'll get those t-shirts done up for sale. But you can still buy, there's a couple of merch hats left. There's still a couple of t-shirts left. So jump on buy some merch, guys. We'll put it in the link below.
See you soon.
See ya.